Hi everyone, thank you for joining us today for another episode of LID Radio Podcast. I'm your host for today, Asaro, and for this episode, we're joined by a very special guest, Dr. Max McEwen, author of The Innovator's Book. Max, how are you today?
I'm so well, Asaro. Yourself? How are you
fantastic,
feeling?
2020. 2020, new year, new decade. The weather is still in that horrible winter season, but...
Depending on where you are in the world, yeah. So someone's listening to this on a beach somewhere thinking that we're living in the wrong country.
Yeah.
They might have a point.
They're listening from a very, very nice location, but we are recording from the cold, cold England, the cold, cold United Kingdom, which sadly just gets colder by the minute. But the weather goes quickly, the year goes quickly, so... Innovation, that's what we're here to talk about today. So before we get in, I just want to give our listeners a brief introduction into who you are and what this book is about. Many of our listeners will be aware of you and your work, but in case we do attract any new listeners today, I'm just going to give you a brief background about Max before we get into the questions. Max McEwen is a globally recognized innovation expert and strategic advisor to many of the world's most admired and ambitious companies, as well as a popular speaker at events worldwide. In his unique performances, he illustrates concepts and insights with bold, original artwork while entertaining, enlightening, and engaging audiences. On his latest book, The Innovator's Book, which is part of our Concise Advice series, Dr. Max McEwen provides the readers with concise advice on how to move from original insights to new ideas, and from new ideas to successful real-world innovation. And before we start the questions, can I just say, I love the design of the book, and I love the subtitle of the book. I think it just, especially because it's got such good and exciting illustrations, it really does... Just reading the cover and seeing the illustrations on the front really sparks the creativity and gives readers an insight into how creative and exciting this book will be and the places it will take you. So kudos to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I mean, I love the cover, yeah. So The Innovator's Book rules for rebels, mavericks, and innovators. But I definitely have to say that when people open the book, and they get through, you know, 4 or 5 pages and they realize what's in store, that it's not just a cover, it's not just another title, it's something to take a certain amount of delight in. And they can really feel the love and the thought and the ideas that are packed into there. I love the book and I created it with Lid. I'm so glad when people get into it and fall in love with it the way I have.
Mm. It's got that unexpectedness, which even in itself triggers innovation and triggers new thoughts and new insights, because you open it up and, like you said, it's not a regular book you'd expect to see. It really is going to take you further, challenge you, and really try and spark innovation, because innovation is a very crucial topic. I think some of the world's greatest leaders and some of the most successful organizations we have today have built their ideas based on the innovation they're able to harness. And sometimes, and we're going to get into that, we do struggle to find and trigger that creativity and that innovation. So I suppose...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were just saying happy 2020, and that idea that we're living in 2020 at all. That I was just looking at the new Blade Runner movie, the reboot, and I was remembering that the original Blade Runner movie was set in 2019, you know, this future with flying cars and all of this incredible innovation. And here we are living even further into the future than that vision of Philip K. Dick. Here we are living in the future and then building even more. And what we've done is remarkable. And what we're going to do is remarkable. It's very easy to get bogged down in thinking that the world's problems are fixed rather than something that can be solved.
It's all relative, isn't it? We see how far we've come, but then we diminish that by comparing it to what people expected of us.
Yes, that dissatisfaction is what drives innovation in some ways. The mastery is trying to get things perfect, you know, what you already know and making that perfect. No errors, no emails in your inbox, no errors, zero defects. And that's nice. And that brings, I think, a certain level of satisfaction. But it's really dissatisfaction that pushes you on you say, well, look, there have never been so many people well-fed, well-rounded and even rotund in the world. So that's an achievement. But at the same time, there are people who don't have enough food or don't have water. And there are people with the internet and all this information flowing into their heads. But then there are still people who are not educated or happy in our environment right now. So somehow you need both, I think. The hope of better, dissatisfaction with the present, but also let's enjoy the ride. Let's enjoy the times in which we live.
You need that motivation. You mentioned that you often need that dissatisfaction to push you forward, to encourage you to do more. How do we do that? How do we take these? Because essentially, innovation is a process which occurs in the mind. You have to internally find yourself creating and discovering new ideas. But how do we really translate the new ideas into practical, feasible, and tangible objects, actions, initiatives, programs? How do we make this innovation effective? And how can we actually see the effects of it? How do we get to that stage where we take the ideas and we put them into action?
One of the things you're talking about here is how we nurture new ideas. How do we take it? And in the Innovator's book, I use the analogy of an idea as a baby, or even before that, a baby is created clearly from its parents, two types of genetic material coming together. And it's the same with idea, with innovations. They have parents, and then they become an idea, and then that idea needs nurturing. So I think for starters, viewing it as a life cycle, viewing it as something creative and almost biological really helps. And what it does is help us live in two different periods. We say, you got to go step by step, stage by stage, little bit by little bit, because that's the only way of progressing. But at the same time, you have to look at where you're going. So when we talk about new ideas as babies, you say, look, the baby is at this level. We can't insist that he can run before he can walk, or walk before he can crawl, or crawl before he's been born. So that it has to go through stages. But at the same time, let's remember that this baby, he or she, will one day be an adult. That's the aim, for them to be an adult and do good in the world. So I think by viewing ideas and innovation as something living, we're better able to start from little steps and then get to the final position. Another thing that's worth saying here is that ideas come from somewhere. Ideas are not really an accident. So sometimes you seek out ideas because you have a problem insight. You look at the world or your life, trivial things or huge things, and you say, I wish that worked better that way. I wish my commute was faster, or I wish I didn't get wet when I'm walking through here, or I wish the internet was faster, or I wish somebody wasn't hungry. You notice a problem and you seek a solution, or you find something cool in the world and you think, I wonder what we could do with this. You have a solution insight. You know the mobile phone is a powerful tool, and you seek to use that powerful tool to do something with. And so sometimes we have problem insights and sometimes we have solution insights. And it's when you bring those two things together that you create a new idea that could be nurtured and become powerful, feasible, useful in the real world, as you describe.
I recently had a conversation with someone about finding ways to achieve new ideas and finding ways to create new ideas when you're in a space which is just giving you a mental block and is not allowing you to progress. And one of the things that I notice, especially in this day and age, is that a lot of people may find ways to discover new ideas and new ways of thinking, but they struggle with the application that follows. Many people are actually scared to take the next step. I think you may have heard the famous quote, a ship is safer in the harbour, but that's what it was built for. Yes. And especially when it comes to this conversation on innovation, how, when we find ways to innovate and to create new ways of thinking, to harness this creativity, how do we know it's going to succeed? And also, how do we overcome that fear of failure? Because you may think of these new ideas, but are you actually going to apply them? And how can you guarantee that that life cycle you mentioned will actually be of a sufficient length and won't die out very quickly?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, clearly some people are like to live on the edge and enjoy that feeling of jeopardy, that they could lose, that it could go wrong. If you think of surfers who surf the ones that go to Portugal and surf the world's largest wave, the 100-meter wave, that they go there and they like testing themselves against the wave and against the possibility that it could go wrong. They like trying the near impossible and sort of wiping out and starting again. So I suppose some people think like that, and that gives them an advantage here because they're willing to do something because it could fail. They like that. So I think, first of all, if you're listening to this and that's what you're like, use that power and that advantage. If you're listening to this and that scares you, and that's stopping you doing something, there are, I think, two key ways that you can go. You can learn from the people who enjoy the risk and start to learn to surf so that you welcome the wave and enjoy the jeopardy. So learn from them. And you can also make it less scary by just going step by step. I mean, what the psychological research suggests is that if you are scared, that's you of the future, that's usually because you're thinking of it in very general terms, vague terms, and you're scared of the bogeyman, the monster in the dark, the thing you don't understand. But if you get specific, you realize and remember that you're a competent human being who can deal with things. So you get practical and little. So look it up, use the incredible web and say, has anybody thought of this idea before? And you'll find on Quora and YouTube and WikiHow and something else, Google Research, somebody who's already tried to do what you're attempting. And then you can learn from them. And if they've already done what you're attempting, then just copy them. Don't try to be super, super new. Copy them and only do new things if it's absolutely necessary because nobody has tried it before. So one, enjoy the excitement, but two, make it less scary by making it less impossible and more practical. People don't do that, Zara. They sit there thinking about their idea without getting practical. Micro tasks, next step, next step, next step, and then you'll get there.
One of the things I love about this book and what you've covered is many of the illustrations discuss simple things, but they analyze them from a different perspective that you wouldn't think of. Like some of the illustrations which say innovation comes anytime, anywhere, or new ideas are built from old ideas. And this whole notion of taking on a concept or a problem, like you said, and reimagining it, Googling it, reinventing it, trying to think of new ways to innovate it and to come up with new innovative ways of doing it. And I suppose with many of our listeners, both in their personal and professional lives, they will have encountered issues or problems or concerns. So as an innovation expert and as the author of the Innovators book, how would you suggest to them that they could reinvent and reimagine these processes and these ways so that they come up with an innovative way of doing them and almost reaching that solution, saying, okay, here's the problem, here's the old idea, which isn't working, this is how you can reinvent it and innovate it to come up with the new way of going?
I think, first of all, knowing that everything that you have today was once thought impossible. So changing something is completely possible. You know, holding on to that, I can change this. I can choose to change this, an active choice. You are free to choose. So anybody listening, take that. I am free to choose. It can be changed. That's hugely important. It's almost like the Deontay Wilder thing, the boxer, to to conceive and to is to believe and to achieve. I almost think that works here, but also that this is a thing to do on a daily basis. Don't beat yourself up. There are lots of principles. It's why we built the Innovators book, so that you could find the answer you needed on any particular day, so that creativity is not an accident. The creative process is not. So you gather together ideas and facts about your about what you want to do, play with them, find connections, write themselves on a pad. If you don't like your commute because you don't like your job, use your commute to allow your subconscious to make a great big idea, and then move it around until you find a good plan. Get your hands dirty. Go and actually try the thing you want to improve. But all the ideas around you have come because, I don't know if listeners know, but about 80% of ideas come from users, people who were using something and found a better way of doing it. So somebody using a vacuum cleaner didn't like changing the bag and then invents the Dyson vacuum cleaner. So use your insights and realize that beautiful ideas are not perfect. So even something you really admire can be improved. That's okay. You can do that. So I suppose believing that it can change, believing that you can reinvent the wheel, believing that you can take an old idea and build a new idea, and treat this as a task you can improve. Creativity is not just a given, it's a skill that can be developed.
How is it something that can be developed? I know that's a very, very open question, but many will be thinking, well, I go to work in a 9-to-5 job, I have the same commute, which I could use as a way to reimagine how I commute, but I go on the same train, on the same tube, on the same bus, or down the same road, and I sit in the same office every day looking at the same thing. How can I build? No, it's true, because a lot of our listeners do.
I just was wondering what you looked at, Asaro.
No, I'm currently sitting in an office, but it's a different environment, thankfully. People listening will know that the podcasts are recorded in a separate building, which may, you never know, this building may actually trigger my innovation, trigger new ways. But I suppose the question is, how can I build something when I'm in an environment which isn't building or changing or developing itself? It's the same environment. So wouldn't it make me the same person? Wouldn't it prevent the level of innovation and the level of ideas that I can develop from it?
Yeah, I think in part, innovation really can come from anyone and anywhere at any time. That spark, and it come. But your best innovations will usually come from trying to improve something that you care about, even if it's trivial. So the guy that came up with the paper cup holder for the coffee cup, he burnt his hand. He put a bit of cardboard around it. He thought, "How can I improve this?" And he wasn't a special person, he wasn't an engineer, he just carried on experimenting with bits of corrugated cardboard until he came up with a cup holder, and then he rode that train he was interviewed recently, he made millions, he was interviewed and he said, "Well, what's going to happen next?" And he said, "Oh, I don't know, I don't have any more ideas, I just had one idea, and I rode it to the end." So I think believing that little or big, it can be altered. You know, the world is socially constructed. People before you were born created the world in which you live, and you can alter it, large or small. Don't view it as fixed. It's rather Matrix-like, I think, that this is about your ability to think your world into a different world into existence. But be practical. Seriously, grab hold of a copy of this book, I would have said. And on your commute, seriously, though, you grab hold of it, you open a page anywhere, and you say, right, what does that paragraph tell me? Quick fixes. What could I do to just improve what I've got here? The Walkman came about because somebody just wanted a portable cassette player. People listening to this don't even remember cassettes, but they wanted a portable cassette player. And so he started lugging around one. He was a Sony executive and they had a big cassette player, and he used to put it in his carry-on luggage, and he would carry it around, and he just said to an engineer, look, it's too heavy, could you make it smaller? And the engineer stripped out all sorts of parts and put it in a smaller box, and that was the first Walkman, and then they commercialized it. You know, quick fixes could be your tip, just a way of doing it. Or and so I think if you believe that the world can be changed, and then you take steps to improve your ability to improve the world, and to improve your ability to improve the world, things get better. And that's what the Innovators book was designed to do. Turn a page every day, write a note, improve, and I promise you, by the end of a period, a year, you will definitely, undoubtedly have changed your world for the better and be a much more able innovator.
What you mentioned about the coffee holder, the coffee cup holder, was a very relevant story, because it makes me realize that I myself am victim to this. It's the fact that you need the intention to innovate. You need to have the intention and the desire to want the change. It's like you said, you buy the Innovators book, you go through each page, and every day you make notes on what you've read and how you can apply it to your life, and how you can find new ways, new ideas in your life based on what this book is telling you. But by buying this book, and by willing to be able to sit down and read it on your commute to work and see how it can apply to your life, you do have the intention and desire to make a change. So I suppose many of us and many of our listeners, including myself, probably sit in a room or in my working environment waiting for the innovation to come to me. And that's not always the case. It's like you said, you need to read this book, and then once you've read what you've needed to read, then you can see, okay, how am I going to, with the intention to make a difference, going to now find innovation in my surroundings? How am I going to, like you said, find a way to not make this coffee burn my hand? And I think that's something really important, which, like I said, I'm victim to. I often think, oh, this environment is so toxic, it's boring, it's dull. But the truth is, like, where is my desire to change it? Where is my intention to change it? That's what people need. You need to get up off your
seats. I love that intention. I love that intention of sorrow. That, you know, an intention, find a way. Find a way. That's what an innovator is, a person who finds a way. And there's a famous innovator. His name was Altshuler. He was Russian, or he lived in the USSR. And he worked in the patent office. And he wanted the world to be better. And he came up with some fantastic concepts and theories for making things better. And he wrote a letter to Stalin explaining how he thought that Russia should be better. And as a result, he was put into a gulag, into prison for daring to make things better. And while he was there, they tried to break him by depriving him of sleep. And while he was there, what he did was he got a tiny bit of paper, and he stuck them onto his eyelids, and he drew a little eye onto it, so that every time his jailers opened the door to see if he was awake or not, it looked like he had his eyes open, while all the time he had his eyes closed and he was sleeping. Eventually, he gets out of jail and he writes his book, and he, you know, survives Stalin. But my point about this is that an innovator finds a way and believes that there is a way. Yeah. So you either need to boost, sometimes you have to boost your self-belief, and sometimes you have to boost your practical skills. And either of those?
No, I completely agree.
Yeah.
And to everyone listening as well, and to everyone listening, you were just about to mention the Innovators book, which I was also going to plug in now. To anyone listening and thinking, how can I achieve innovation? How can I actually apply this to my own life? By choosing to buy this book, a book called The Innovators Book, you are subconsciously, whether you realize it or not, willing to make a difference in your life. By choosing to purchase this book and read it and see, okay, how is this book going to help me think differently, come up with new concepts and innovate? By choosing to buy it and choosing to read it, you are willing to apply it to your life. And that's when the book will start to give you new ways, new insights, and start to give you new strategies and new developments so you can make the difference. Because the stories you mentioned are all really relevant. They had an intention to change something, and because they did that, they were innovating, they were coming up with new ideas. They were doing the impossible, because it's like you said, no one would have thought to put a cardboard cutout of the shape of a coffee cup round a coffee cup to prevent yourself from getting burnt. Prior to him inventing it, no one would have considered that. It wasn't even something impossible. It was something unimaginable. So I think that's another thing we should mention.
It didn't exist and it was easy. And so many things like that, when we talk about new ideas being made of old ideas, what we're saying is that everything that has ever been invented has been invented from something that, with, you know, components, bits that already existed. You know, penicillin was around a long time before it was discovered and then industrialized and then used to turn into antibiotics to help cure people infections. It existed already. DNA existed before it was described. And gene editing, the genes have existed clearly for a long, long time, as long as life. So it's important to know that all the raw materials for making things better already exist. History, in effect, is made up of innovators, people who take what exists and make it more useful. Innovation is new ideas made useful. It's practical creativity. And what I really like about what you said is that you have to say, I'm a member of the human race. I'm a person, and humans are capable of imagining better. And I'm one of those. I am an innovator, and that's how I'm going to live my life. I'm not going to just accept the constraints that I'm lived with. I'll use other people's ideas to make my life better, or I will make other ideas better and improve other people's lives. It goes round and round and round like that. And purchasing this book, or just saying, I am an innovator, let me get to work, let me complete the three jobs of an innovator, it makes a real difference. But people may not know what those three jobs are.
Lastly, my last question for you before we have to wrap this podcast up is that we talked about the workplace and we talked about how someone themselves in their own roles in their day-to-day lives could find innovation. But obviously workplaces have hierarchy. They have leaders, they have managers, they have heads of departments who can impose on the work you do and the tasks you do. But as a manager and as a leader and as a CEO and as a head, your job is to lead, guide and coach people within your team and your organization. And essentially, you've hired these employees because they're good at what they do. So how do you encourage their creativity? How do you motivate and trigger them to find innovation in their teams and to find innovation in what they do? How do you get, essentially, how do you bring out the innovation from someone else?
I suppose, again, we talked about innovation being coming from anyone at any time. That doesn't mean everybody is equally good at it, though. So if I was leading a team or a company of whatever size, I would say to the group, these are the two. First of all, we're in the business of innovating. We're open for business. We are idea hungry. In the book, I talk about idea toxic organizations, idea friendly, idea wasteful, but the very best is idea hungry, where the group are saying, we want new ideas to improve things. So first of all, say, I want an idea. I am idea hungry. I'm open for new ideas. And I want to work with you to make things better. Make that clear, because people are waiting for it. You know, 75% of people believe that their creative potential is not being used at work. So that is a great resource. You're already employing the person, but what you're not getting is their discretionary creativity. So make it clear that you're in that business. Secondly, point out to the group when you're with them and at every meeting you're with them what the three jobs are and start discussing it with the group at the start of each meeting. Just 5-10 minutes. I mean, I built the Innovators book for that purpose, for my own clients, so that they could have a low-cost way of achieving this. Say to them, listen, there are three jobs of an innovator: to make ideas useful, it's to build a bigger brain or organization around our ideas, and then it's to help those ideas win in the real world. Three jobs. Let's look at our ideas and see where we're succeeding and where we need to do better. Do we have enough ideas? Yes or no? Have we made them useful? Yes or no? Have we built an organization around them? Yes or no? Or do we have all the ideas and all the organization, but we're not really selling them to the world? We haven't found our message and our approach to getting it across. And you can identify, therefore, where the focus needs to be. Lots of ideas, but no ability to sell them. Selling is your problem. Selling loads of ideas, but they're not very useful ideas. Ideas are your problem, and so on. So make it clear you're open for business. Make it clear what the three jobs are, and then go to work in little ways as part of your day-to-day so that innovation becomes business as usual.
Thank you, Max. That was really lovely. Thank you for joining us. We had a great conversation, and I hope that our listeners can now go out there, purchase this book, and can start. It's never too late to start. It's a new decade, a new you, and can start finding ways to develop themselves, to innovate themselves, to change how they work and to change their regular dynamics, because it will improve your ability to think differently, to act differently, and your ability to work both in your personal life and your social life. So before we go, anyone interested to know more about you and your work, where could they find you?
Well, LinkedIn's a really good place. So linkedin.com/Max McEwen. I think that's good. I'm on Twitter, and there's a website as well, maxmcewen.com. But come find me on LinkedIn, I think, and what you'll find are snippets from the books, research findings, video, and you can join in that conversation. And even better if you come armed with a photo of you and the Innovators book, because I know that you're a kind of fully paid up member of the Innovators Club.
Fantastic. And thank you to everyone for listening to this podcast. Don't forget to keep an eye out on our social media. That's at Lid Publishing on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. For more information about new book experts, opinions, and of course, more podcasts with amazing thought leaders such as Dr. Max McEwen, don't forget to check out Lid Radio Podcast. And that's it from us. That's it from me. I've been your host, and we'll see you next time on Lid Radio Podcast. Thank you. Goodbye.